Ladies and gentlemen, I want to welcome you to another edition of Civil Discourse. I'm Anthony Donatelli. I have the privilege of sitting with an American patriot, Mr. Sean Poole. He is a retired military officer. He currently is employed with the city of Spokane as a firefighter, and he's running to be your next mayor of the city of Spokane. So without further ado, Sean, thank you for being here. Go ahead and tell the voters a little bit of background about you, and let's lay out what our top three things are in the world today.
Appreciate you having me here. Out of the kindness of your heart, you invited me here along with the other candidates to talk about what they're doing, what they're trying to do for Spokane. A little bit about me. I was born and raised here. Went to Finch Elementary School, Glover Junior High, Shadle Park High School. I was fortunate enough back in high school to be fairly athletic. Went to play football at University of Montana. Played there for 5 years. And then simultaneously got my commission as a second lieutenant through ROTC at the University of Montana. As soon as I realized that the NFL was not going to be for me, I quickly decided to go on active duty. My first duty station was Fort Hood, Texas. I was in the original Desert Shield, Desert Storm.
Yeah, so was
way
I.
Way back in the day.
So was I.
You're really showing your age.
I know. I know.
Original Desert Shield, Desert Storm, kind of became disgruntled. Had a old division commander back then that wanted to take assets that were actually protecting his division and move them to handle horses or something like that because he wanted to charge across the desert with saber in hand and defeat the Republican Guard by ourselves.
Right on.
Moved back to Spokane because it was the place that I came from, place sure. I wanted to raise a family.
Sure.
Had no idea what I wanted to do. My wife at the time and I were looking to buy a house, and one of the houses that we looked at was owned by a retired firefighter. And we started talking, and he asked what I wanted to do, and I said, I had no idea. He said, you ought to think about the fire service. You're giving a test in a couple months. I wasn't one of those kids that grew up with a fire truck and, you know, dressed as a firefighter every Halloween. Had no idea about the fire service. Took the test, and at that time, it was right after Backdraft came out.
Yeah.
So there were roughly 1,800, 2,000 people that took the same test as I did.
Sure.
So it was very competitive. The only saving grace on my part as a Caucasian male was veterans preference points.
Right on.
And that's a federal law. So competed with 1,800, 2,000 people, ended up getting a job. And here it is about 27 years later. Missed the uniform, the Army uniform.
Sure.
So then I got into the reserve system. Spent most of my career here in Spokane as an Army reservist in a drill sergeant unit. I was fortunate enough to get lucky or be good at leadership, one of the two, maybe a combination of both. And was able to advance my career through the Army Reserves. My last duty assignment was, I got promoted to Fulbright Colonel in August of 2014.
Sure. Congratulations, by the way.
I took an assignment over at Fort Shafter Flats, Hawaii, with the 9th Mission Support Command, and I was their G3 training and operations guy. That unit consisted of roughly 3,700 soldiers, spread throughout seven Western states, and American Samoa, Guam, South Korea, Japan.
So that tour must have really just sucked to be in the Pacific and, you know,
I get
being tortured with all that good weather.
I get the common expression that I get is one of, wow, that must be a hard duty station. And, you know, it was novel for about the first 6 months. I'd never been to the Pacific, never been to the Hawaiian Islands. And it was great for about the first 6 months. But then, as you well know, there's a thing called God and love time.
Oh, yeah.
And so roughly about half the time that I commuted to Fort Shafter Flats, Hawaii, I paid for my own airline ticket and paid for my own food.
Sure.
And that was just something that you did. And maybe it's old school, maybe it's not, but it's something that I did to give back to this nation. You know, I love this nation and I've defended this nation for the better part of 30 years. And so I knew that I wasn't going to get rich, didn't have any aspirations of getting rich, but it was just something that I did to give back. There was no expectation for, you know, any type of return, reimbursement, things like that.
Right.
It was just, It was patriotism. And
I did the exact same thing commuting to Joint Base Lewis-McChord, as well as a military, because I ended my career retired as a guard soldier, retired as a W-3, and commuting to Tacoma every drill weekend, mm-hmm. or every AT, that was on my own dime.
Well, and a lot of people don't understand in the civilian world that, you know, that we have things called God and love time. And I equate the things that I did in the military with what I do in civilian life. You know, this whole mayoral campaign or city government in general, it seems like the attitude nowadays is, you know, what do I get for free? If I come to work for you, what kind of benefits or perks am I going to get? And to me, that's counterintuitive, because that's not civil service.
Right.
Civil service is about giving back to the community that has entrusted you to run their city. So that's how I live my military life. It's how I live my civilian life. And being a firefighter for almost 27 years, you know, that's proof positive that I have an attitude of civil service. And
so all that, your firefighting time, that's right here in the city of Spokane, right?
Correct.
So yeah. You've spent a lifetime in service to this city already.
I have spent a lifetime. And I heard somebody mention the other day that, you know, it's hard to find people that actually stay with one job, you know, for the majority of their adult life.
Right.
And you experience that every day. You know, people are moving jobs. And I was raised that when you get hired for a job, that's the job you have for the rest of your life. And I was fortunate enough that, you know, the fire service happened to be in the civil service department, and I could actually give back and continue my record of giving back and serving.
Sure. All right. So top three, what's on your list, man? What are the top three things that are important to Sean Poole?
First would be family.
Okay.
Second would be the city, and third would be this nation.
Okay. Well, that's a pretty good list. So do we dive right into it? You're running for mayor.
I am.
What's some of the issues you see facing Spokane County, the east, you know, the east side of the state that is, in my opinion, largely disrepresentative of the west side of the state? How do you as a mayor fix whatever you think is wrong right now?
Basically by taking action. I take a real simplistic approach to problem solving. You know, we as a society, we are real good at identifying problems. We're really good at coming up with complex solutions for those problems. And in my opinion, you don't have to have a complex solution for a problem. First and foremost is action. You know, make a decision and stick with that decision. An example I use all the time is we have potholes in Spokane.
Sure.
If you didn't realize that, go drive on any street in Spokane.
Yeah.
It's a simple approach to fixing potholes. You put the, you know, North Monroe corridor road diets on hold. You put the beautification projects on hold, and you get all hands on deck, and everybody that is out there that works for the city that fills potholes, they get out and they start filling potholes. It's that simple. I've been called a simpleton numerous times, and I'm okay with that.
Yeah. Right.
A lot of times simple is better than complex. The four issues that I have with Spokane that we are starting to see, and a lot of it is coming from the west side. So infrastructure and primarily roads. We need to, as a taxpayer in Spokane, you deserve to drive down the street without being fearful that you're going to break a rim, mess your axle up because you hit a pothole.
Sure. Well, that's a huge expenditure to fix any car on the road today. So.
It absolutely is.
You're talking about quality of life.
Absolutely. As a taxpayer, you know, you're already paying what Washington State's the second highest tax state in the United States. I think we're quickly approaching becoming the first highest tax state in the nation.
How is that even possible without an income tax?
Look at what's coming out of Olympia. You know, look what's come out of Olympia the past 2 or 3 months during legislative session. You know, you're getting ready to see, I think, a 30-cent increase per gallon of gas, and that's new out of Olympia. You're looking at an excise tax, which, if I understand it correctly, is nothing more than a capital gains tax. They find ways to tax you, and if you look at median wage across the state of Washington, you'll see that Spokane is on the lower end. And the median wage in Spokane is roughly $47,000, $48,000 a year. You pay those kind of taxes, and as a family, you're just trying to get by. You're trying to provide for your family. You have a common expectation that your taxes are going to get you benefits in return. One of those are safe streets.
Right.
Safe streets in with regard to potholes and the infrastructure. Safe streets with regard to crime, and specifically property crime.
Yeah, oh, there you go. Now you're speaking my language. We're gonna loop back to that.
Okay, so you've got, and not necessarily in that order, you've got infrastructure, primarily streets. Let's fix the streets. Let's give that back to the citizens that pay taxes. You go to register your car in the city of Spokane, and you get tabbed with a $20 tax on top of what you're paying for registration. And that is for the Transportation Benefit District that the city of Spokane established in, I think, 2010. And it's another way of taxing. 90% of that revenue generated when you register your car is supposed to go to streets maintenance. The other 10% is supposed to go to sidewalk maintenance. I'm not sure that's actually happening, especially in light of driving through Spokane and literally nothing is being done. So infrastructure, streets, property crime. You know, at one time, and a lot of what I post on social media relates to the problems here in Spokane. And at one time, I think we were 79 out of 80th least safe cities in Washington State. And that was based on FBI crime statistics for 2016, I believe.
Now, is that for when you say least safe, what's the UCR that is classifying that?
The UCR?
Uniform Crime Report.
Yeah.
Are you talking about violent crime when you say least safe?
It's a combination of violent crime and property crime.
Okay.
So it's linked together. The predominance of what we see in Spokane is property crime.
Okay.
And that's a good segue into my third topic, which is the homeless population. I started this campaign well over a year ago, and I started with the homeless population. I've seen the homeless population explode in the last 27 years of being on the streets of Spokane.
Sure.
I've seen it.
And you got a window seat to this, right?
Because
that's kind of your job, is responding to those emergencies, dealing with the homeless folks.
It is. And you start to hear people now talk about three classes of homeless. Back when I started, it was just the homeless population. I think I probably coined the terminology that deals with homelessness. And it's, you have a homeless population, the true homeless, that for some unforeseen reason have fallen on hard times.
Sure.
And they become homeless. They're very prideful. They want to get back on their feet. They just need some help. And we as a society owe that to them. You have a second class of homeless, which I label as transients. They enjoy living a nomadic lifestyle. When the weather turns bad, a lot of times they'll go to a place like Seattle or San Francisco to get out of the cold weather in Spokane.
Sure.
And then when it gets nice, they'll come back. So you've got the true homeless, you've got the transients, and then you have the homeless advocates. And the homeless advocates are those people that have taken the stand that we need to give our homeless population everything and then some. Most of the homeless advocates aren't even homeless themselves. So that's the third point, is the homeless transient population. And then the fourth one, and it's near and dear to my heart, and I know you saw it with, I think you have, over 30 years of military service?
Sure.
You saw it, and it's called fraud, waste, and abuse.
Oh, yeah, there we go.
When I talk about civil service and I talk about giving back, I live that every day. I try and give back to my community. It's almost a common expectation when you go to work for the city that you get some perk in return. And that's not what civil service is about. You know, you don't go to work for municipal government with the expectation you're going to get a company car. You know, most of Spokaneites don't have a company car. They don't get a gas card. They don't get the newest, latest, and greatest cell phones. But that's, we seem to hand those out like candy when you go to work for city government. And in those cases, you're not being a fiduciary steward of the taxpayer money. And I'm a fiscal conservative. I actually have a novel idea, and that's let's lower taxes. It's hard to when you have that much waste in city government. You know, there's only a handful of critical positions that actually need a take-home vehicle.
Sure.
But we have a lot of employees, it seems like, that take those vehicles and drive them home or drive them to the nearest, you know, city facility that's closest to their house, their apartment. And to me, that's wrong. You know, if I get elected, those things are going away, but plain and simple. We don't need them. It's not what civil service is about. You know, it's a waste of money.
Okay.
So those are the four big hot topics that I look at in the city of Spokane.
So which one do you want to talk about first? Because, you know, for me inviting, you know, any and all of the candidates on here, I wanted to give each one of you the ability to maybe have a long form conversation that you might not otherwise have been able to have with a citizen that wants to hear your message. So we can talk about one of them. We can talk about all of them. Which one do you want to tackle first?
I bet we talk about homeless.
Okay.
Since that seems to be the biggest hot topic in Spokane now. And like I said before, I started this mayoral campaign over a year ago. And, you know, a lot of what I posted on social media was about the homeless. I have seen the homeless come to Spokane for just the handouts.
Sure.
You know, you talk to people and, hey, where are you from? And, oh, what brings you to Spokane? Well, I heard Spokane treats their homeless really well. And yeah, we do. We're a very generous city. The problem I have with that is that you're enabling a class of people and you're basically keeping them in a subservient lifestyle. There's no impetus for them to do anything. When all their basic needs are met via free handouts, you're not in it, or you're not giving them a hand up. You're giving them a handout, and people become reliant on handouts. And it's evident in Spokane by the sheer number of homeless or transients that we have.
Well, I will tell you this, since you mentioned, conservatism fiscally, I follow that line pretty well myself. Socially, I'd like to think I'm more on the liberal side. I don't think big government has a spot telling us what to do in our personal dealings and lives.
Mm-hmm.
But the homeless situation here is frustrating to me because we have a gorgeous city here, and it is just a good time to go down and sit downtown. And, you know, it seems like every single year, it gets more beautiful and more beautiful and more beautiful. And I've only been here since 2011. But now it's at the point where it's getting more difficult to drag myself down there because of the filth and the trash and the people that are living in our streets downtown.
There are a lot of people out there that echo that same sentiment. I've heard from a lot of people that used to frequent downtown a lot, and now they won't go downtown anymore. They don't feel safe. You know, panhandling has gotten more aggressive, even though we have ordinances for panhandling in the core. It's a problem that is continually going to get worse if we keep going about it with the same attitude that we have for the past number of years. You can throw as much money as you want at a problem, but statistically, if that problem doesn't get better, then the solutions that you came up with probably aren't working all that well.
So one of the things that I absolutely disagreed with when I had Chris Schroll on, and it seems that every candidate for an office has a certain tagline that they use that creates likes, you know, social mm-hmm. media likes and shares. And he says, we need to stop criminalizing being homeless. We need to stop criminalizing homelessness. And that, I mean, it plays well on a bumper sticker, but I don't think it's reality.
It's not. You know, it's. I watched the transformation of Spokane's West End, Brown's Addition.
Sure.
For about the first 19 years of my firefighting career, I spent down in Brown's Addition. And if you remember back in the day in the early 90s, the whole west end of downtown Spokane was horrible. Drug dealings on every corner, prostitution, gang shootouts, things like that. And then somebody had the foresight to actually put signs on the streets. And they were what in their infancy back then is now the sit lie ordinances. So they erected signs, no sitting, no lying, no stopping, no camping, things like that. And it really did a good job of cleaning up the West End. Obviously it pushed those people, you know, farther east, maybe down into the downtown core around.
Well, I don't think signs did that. Enforcement of ordinance did that. So correct. You obviously had a very strong administration running the police department.
Correct. It was twofold. It was the signs, and then it was the enforcement of those ordinances that were passed. And like I said, it did a really good job of cleaning up the West End. I'm in favor of enforcing the law.
Sure.
You know, as a society, we live by the rule of law. And you don't pass ordinances to not enforce them. I don't think it's criminalizing the homeless. You know, I've always said for the past year that we owe it as a society to help those less fortunate.
That want help.
To an extent. Enforcing the sit lie ordinances, it does a couple of things. Number one, it keeps the people who are chronically homeless off the streets. It opens up those passageways for, you know, the honest taxpayers that want to frequent our beautiful downtown
core.
Sure,
sure.
It makes people feel safer. We've gone full circle with this criminalizing the homeless. And now we are to the point where we're criminalizing the business owners that are just trying to make a living for them and their families in the downtown core specifically.
Right.
When we don't enforce the sit lie ordinances, we criminalize a group of people that are contributing to society. They're paying taxes. They're bringing revenue dollars into Spokane. And, you know, there's some of those businesses that have gone out of business. You know, if you look on the east end of downtown, you can look at vacant buildings, you know, right and left. People are afraid to do business down there. They, you know, when you come to work in the morning and your entire front stoop is filled with, you know, a transient population who defecate and urinate at your place of business and leave their hypodermic needles around, it scares off foot traffic. And it's not a safe environment for the employees that have to work down there.
So, you know, we're sitting two days away from Bloomsday right now, right? Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of people coming into town right now to run Bloomsday. There will be in another month or two for Hoop Fest, right? Mm-hmm. How does it change at all? Does the city's enforcement ramp up during these times so we can give the impression? And this is just purely conjecture for me. I'm asking a question since you work down there.
There are a lot of times when you have, it may be the mayor that maybe goes down and visits the area around the House of Charity. And what they'll do is they'll bring in cleaners and clean the streets and, you know, and tell a lot of the transient population to, you know, go sleep somewhere else for the day or go hang out someplace else for the day. So they paint a prettier picture than what is actually down there.
How do you fix it then, Sean? How do you fix it? I mean, because we can talk about the issues all day long, right? But if we don't have a plan to fix it, it's still just talk. And that's why I'm super excited that you have accepted the invite to come sit here, because I think of all the people that are running for this election to be mayor of Spokane, you're the only one with really executive experience, leadership experience.
It's pretty simple to me on how you fix it. And there's a couple of different things you do. Number one is enforce the law. We have laws on the books. We need to enforce them. We need to let the police department do their job. The majority of the police officers signed up to enforce the law. They didn't sign up to get rich. They didn't sign up generally for the benefits. They signed up because they wanted to give back and they wanted to enforce the law. So we
start. Do you not think that that's happening as it should now?
I don't. I think that that City Hall has its hands in the police department and has ostensibly tied their hands a little bit on enforcing some of these ordinances that we have. I know that police officers out there are extremely frustrated. You know, all you have to do is look at Seattle. A lot of police officers are leaving in droves over there.
Right.
Because they're more terrified of what the city council is going to do to them. You know, if they enforced a law, then what could happen to them on the streets?
So, have you had the opportunity to, I'm assuming since, you know, city employees, when I was a police officer, talked with our firefighters several times a day because many of the calls we went on were there together. Is, I don't expect you to mention any names, but the rank and file, the actual patrolmen out there doing the work and patrol women, I guess, do they echo that? Do they feel they're kind of being tied?
Some of the ones that I've talked to, yes, they feel like their hands are tied. Again, and I can't stress it enough, they signed up to enforce the law.
Sure.
To be a police officer. And when I addressed the police guild, somebody asked me a question. And it was, are you going to interfere in the police department's ability to enforce the law? And I said, look, I said, I'm not the smartest guy in the world, but I guarantee you that those department heads will be the smartest people in their field. They'll be the subject matter experts. I said, my job as the mayor is to give the police chief a mission and a vision and the resources to accomplish that mission and then to hold them accountable. Anything other than that, if you have any questions, you need anything, give me a call. But there won't be interference from City Hall in the police department. I'm not the subject matter expert in policing. The police chief is.
How do you feel about Craig?
I don't know Craig. I don't think I've ever met him. I think he's doing a good job with what he has to work with.
Okay.
I honestly do. I think he's trying to do the right thing. But again, when you have a bunch of hands from City Hall, you have a bunch of suits from City Hall putting their hands into different areas, it kind of gets convoluted.
Well, and I can tell you from firsthand experience, so I'm certainly no subject matter expert in fire service, but when it comes to being police, been there, done that. And as a patrolman, you know, the person out there charged with maintaining the peace, enforcing the laws, it seems that there's very few other professions that politicians become subject matter experts and know your job better than you do. So police are constantly second-guessed and told what the best way to police the city is. And so that's frustrating. And if you're hearing that from rank and file, then I would certainly hope as an executive in that position that you could empower your police chief and his administration to.
And that's the intent. You know, it's, again, I'm not the subject matter expert in policing. All I can do is I can give, you know, and it's whether it's police department, fire department, streets, the biggest thing I can do is give them the latitude to actually do their job and then hold them accountable. I think accountability is huge. And it goes back into, you know, what are we going to do about this homeless issue? You know, enforce the laws. One, hold the homeless population accountable.
How do you do that?
First and foremost, if they have, an addiction, we as a society need to help them try and get off that addiction. So random, urine testing, they have to stay clean and sober. If they expect something from us and we're going to invest in them, then we need to have buy-in from them. That's the only way it's going to work.
Okay, so that's a very binary decision. And I won't say, you know, I agree or disagree with it. I know in my job, the job that I get paid to do, mm-hmm. you know, I am subject to random urine analysis, you know? So I show up to work, and if I'm abusing drugs, and since I'm a federal employee, that includes marijuana, which in the state of Washington is legal. I will lose my clearance. I will be fired. And so there's a cost benefit for that. So if I want to receive a job, a very well-paying job and a job that's been very good to myself and my family, there's give and take with that. I signed up for it. And so I certainly don't disagree that if we are going to offer help with someone, that it should come with stipulations. We want to make sure we're getting a return on our investment, right? You can look at it like that, business terms.
And that's oftentimes that's how I relate it is you expect there's no Fortune 500 company out there, CEO, that could spend the kind of money that we as a municipality spend and not have a return on their investment. They wouldn't be the CEO very long.
Right.
You know, and it may sound kind of cruel to equate it to, you know, to put it in business language, but, you know, there's an expectation, and there's an expectation for everybody in life. And in this case, in my opinion, the expectation is, if you want our help, if you truly want our help, we're going to give you a hand up. We're not going to give you a handout because we're going to make it way too comfortable for you. We'll give you a hand up. We'll get you that, you know, that drug and alcohol cessation treatment. We'll get you the mental health treatment that you potentially need. But you have to invest in us as well. You know, for a long time, and I've seen it for a long time, you have a group of people that I call the transients that, you know, they disrespect this very generous city. They
sure.
disrespect the same people that are very generous that are trying to help them. You know, they urinate and defecate wherever they want. They throw their trash wherever they want. And it's disrespectful to the people in the city that are trying to help them.
It's not only disrespectful, but it's criminal, right? Because if you're going to defecate on a city street, that's a criminal act. You're exposing yourself. You are exposing the populace to biologicals, contaminants, mm-hmm. right? But when Ben sat in that seat right there, he had a really good point. And I think it's one worth considering, that if they are homeless and they don't have anywhere and the businesses downtown don't want them rolling into their establishment. I've been downtown, you know, we sat at the same place, you know, mm-hmm. a little diner downtown, the Satellite. And when someone's sitting there having a meal, trying to enjoy themselves with family or friends, you don't want a guy that hasn't showered in 6 weeks walking through the door, walking past your table to use the washroom. But how do you rectify that with, they don't have the place, the proper facilities to do those things, you know, to go to the bathroom. Something as simple as going to the bathroom. That should be something that I think that we afford them before we turn around and say, okay, you've just committed a crime.
I think that the part and parcel, this goes back to the housing first model. You know, you can get, and again, if you look at the homeless population as two different subsets, you've got the true homeless. You know, the homeless advocates aside, you have the true homeless and the transients. Do the transients actually want housing? Do they want to get clean and sober? I don't think they do. My interaction with them is they don't. They like living that nomadic lifestyle.
Sure.
They don't like conforming to societal norms. And we've made it extremely comfortable for them in Spokane because we give them everything they want. Basic human needs like showering, things like that. It's never going to happen if you're going to continue to stay addicted to, you know, and I'm talking the hardcore drugs, the
sure.
meth, the heroin,
sure.
things like that.
And we see needles all over the place.
You're never going to get better. You're never not going to stop defecating in public. That's the lifestyle that you chose. That's the lifestyle that you embrace. But
do you think that there should be a way for them to not? So if you're going to say you pissed on the street, therefore I'm going to arrest you for exposing yourself in public and exposing the public to that biological waste. Do you think we should have, as a city, a way for someone to do it and not be criminal about it? And if so, do we build those facilities, or do you form partnerships with businesses downtown that will allow them to go into their businesses? What does that look like? How does that happen?
You know, there's a, I believe it's a nonprofit that just bought a shower trailer a couple months ago. And it's a mobile shower trailer, and it goes around, and you know, members of the homeless population can go take a shower, clean up, things like that. I would be in favor of things like that, but short term. You know, we as a society owe it to people, but you know, this can't be one of those that you're going to be this way for the next 40 or 50 years.
You're just enabling a bad behavior.
Correct. You know.
So you don't think that's building shower facilities and restrooms downtown that are accessible to the homeless is a good answer?
It may be a good short-term answer. The better short-term and then long-term answer is to get them the actual help that they need. because until you change that behavior, you're not going to change the person. If you've been addicted to drugs your entire life and you like living that nomadic lifestyle where you can go out and do your drugs, you're never going to change.
Sure.
Somebody can offer you a nice new apartment, and what are you going to do? You're probably going to go in and trash it. I heard a story out of, I think it was Arvida, Colorado. They built some homeless shelters, nice apartments for homeless. And one gentleman, I think it was a week before he actually stayed in his apartment, because he was so used to that nomadic lifestyle. And it was terrifying. Again, the better short-term and long-term solution is to get them off the drugs, get them off the alcohol. And again, I'm talking about the hardcore drugs.
Sure.
Give them a sense of self-worth, get them the mental health. And I think you can look at
that. Sounds great. What does that look like though, Sean?
Well, we already took a step in the right direction with the new Envision Center downtown.
Okay.
It's a HUD initiative. We're one of 17 cities. And it's a one-stop community resources shop. You know, can you imagine being homeless and having to navigate all these different areas that you have to in order to be productive again? I talked to a gentleman a couple weeks ago. It took him 2 months to get an ID. And that's doing them a disservice. So this Envision Center, it's a one-stop shop, and everything is contained under one roof. So you have intake, you determine mental health needs, you determine drug and alcohol cessation needs, you determine those basic needs up front. You start getting them help immediately. We can build all of the homeless shelters we want, all the new apartment buildings for the homeless that we want. But again, until you change that lifestyle and change that behavior and change some of those addictive personality things, you're never going to be successful.
Do you mind if I play this clip? So this is a clip that was posted exactly 1 month ago by KXLY, a local news broadcast station here. And it's talking about this issue in depth and the mayoral candidates, what's coming to the forefront of the mayoral election as far as topics. So I'm going to run this. This is currently playing off of KXLY's YouTube channel.
The issue that shows up the most frequently on candidate platforms is one that you've seen right here on KXLY 4 News continuously for the past few months. Homelessness and the complexity of serving Spokane's homeless population is expected to be a major topic of this mayoral race. Every candidate lists homelessness on their platform, and some include attention for homeless housing specifically. And that priority was reflected when we asked you what issues you think are the most important for Spokane. Homelessness, public safety and crime, and economic development and growth were the three issues most frequently listed on candidate platforms. So we asked you which of those or other issues you felt was most important. The numbers varied on each social media site, but homelessness received significant response on each poll. 53% of Facebook voters chose homelessness as their top choice. Twitter users put it at 35%, just above economic development and growth. And Instagram users overwhelmingly offered homelessness as their main priority. On Facebook, about 7% of voters said their primary issue was not one of those main three. Roads, particularly potholes, was a common write-in response, as was housing. Other standalones from candidates: cultural diversity, sustainability, jobs, youth issues, and transportation.
All right. So obviously your number one there with the infrastructure and roads is resonating with the people that are going to be casting their ballots in this upcoming race. Homelessness, obviously near the top of everybody's mind going into this next race and preparing for the next administration. What's your thoughts on this?
Well, remember up front, I said that, and not necessarily, one to four order.
Sure.
Homelessness obviously is one of the biggest contributors to what we're going through now. You talk about economic development or economic growth. The goal there is to bring business to Spokane, to bring businesses to downtown Spokane. A real vibrant downtown Spokane is productive, generates a lot of revenue. But right now, some of the things that we're doing are counterproductive to that end state, which is economic development. There's a lot of businesses that will stay away from downtown because of the homeless issue.
Sure.
They just don't want to deal with it. They don't want to go into business to then again have to go out of business because they get no foot traffic. You know, people are afraid to frequent their establishment. So my top priority, and it has been for over a year, has been the homeless issue. We keep throwing money at an issue. It hasn't gotten any better. In fact, it's gotten a lot worse. But we continue to adopt the same legislation that contributes to this explosion in the homeless population.
I'm sure you've probably seen, well, maybe I'm assuming incorrectly, but have you seen the Como expose called Seattle is Dying?
I've seen that video, and I've had it forwarded to me probably over 100 times. I've seen it, and I think the statement that I used in an interview was it's an intrinsic, unadulterated look at homelessness. You're looking at failed policies in Seattle. I saw a follow-up story, and it's not just conservatives, it's not just liberals, it's everybody across the board in Seattle is getting tired of it, because the Seattle City Council and the mayor have adopted legislation and programs that only feed into increasing numbers of homeless.
Enabling.
Correct.
I saw a follow-up story, and I don't know if we're talking about the same story, but it really just got my blood boiling because they're talking to business owners now. And there was one guy that said, you know, these folks come and park their camper because you say homeless, right? That's not necessarily homeless. They don't have a street address that you can deliver mail to, but they do have a camper, and the camper's broke down. So it's parked in this business's parking area, and they can't do anything about it. You basically have a family living in their parking lot, and they're not allowed to do anything about it. Matter of fact, they criminalized, they penalized the business for putting up a sign stating that there was no parking there.
I think we're talking about the same article, and I think something that resonated from that article is the elites now are starting to come to the forefront. And when I say elites, it's, you know, it's generally power, money, things like that. And they're being affected by it. You sure. know, there's a, and it may be any town USA, but there's a pervasive attitude, and it starts with, if I don't see it and it doesn't affect me, it's not real. And I think Spokane had that attitude for a long time. And I think people are just starting to wake up to the fact that we have a crisis on our hands, and we're doing very little to help end that crisis. You're never going to end homelessness. It's always going to be around.
Sure.
But you can come up with solutions that actually work, that work for everybody. You can get the true homeless off the streets. You can get them into housing.
So you had mentioned that with before we actually hit the record button about affordable housing. What does that mean to you? Because I know you said it affected you personally.
It affected me personally. It affects me personally. My mom is 75 and she's moving back to Spokane. She was born and raised here. She's lived in Florida for a number of years and she's moving back, and she's on a fixed income. And, until it hits home with you, you kind of go about your daily life and what's affordable housing. Well, there's affordable housing for the homeless, which a lot of times is subsidized housing, Section 8 housing, however sure. you want to look at it, HUD, state funds, local funds. And then you have, and I'm going to say that our most vulnerable population is not in the homeless. It's our elderly.
Sure.
A 75-year-old mom moving back to Spokane on a fixed income, and she can't afford to rent a decent, safe place in Spokane. And that's disheartening to me. You know, she spent her entire life contributing to society,
sure.
Working in Spokane, paying taxes in Spokane, bringing in revenue to Spokane, and, you know, now she has to live in a flop house. You know, it's disheartening when at the same time we're building these Taj Mahal subsidized housing apartments downtown for a group of people that may not respect what you're trying to do for them. Let's enact programs for the elderly, or we, you know, subsidize yeah. housing for the elderly.
Well, I certainly don't think that's a bad idea. One of the things that really did not resonate well with me at all was this winter when you had the camp out at City Hall and you basically have people demanding, you're going to provide me a place to sleep. You're going to provide me food. And I'm sorry, Sean, if you disagree with this, but I worked my entire life. I know you have too. From the time I was 17 and I raised my right hand and enlisted in the United States Army, I have provided for myself. I've never demanded anything from anybody that I didn't earn. And I don't know if that would sit well with me to just expect others to provide for me and my family. But it certainly didn't sit well with me that people are camping out at our city hall demanding things, and that our city hall, our council members are on board with it. Yes, stay here, come inside. And I mean, they just got an ordinance. Thank God, David Condon, that you vetoed that thing.
Well, and I got to say thank you to Ben Stucker, too, for not overriding Mayor Condon's veto. That was a stand-up thing to do. You know, when we first started this show, I talked about three classes of homeless.
Sure.
You've got the homeless, you've got the transients, and then you've got the homeless advocates. The majority of what you saw at City Hall were the homeless advocates, the people that have undertaken this social justice attitude, and it's a cultural shift as well. Back when you and I were raised, you know, you went to high school, you either went to college afterwards, or you joined the military, or became a trade person someplace.
Sure.
It seems like the attitude now, and again, it's a cultural shift, that now it's that entitlement, and I'm entitled to all of these things.
Right.
I disagree with that. I've worked my entire life for what I have.
Sure.
I'm very prideful. You know, I don't think social services that we have were ever designed to be long-term. You know, it's to help people get back on their feet so that they can start being productive again, and then they continue to lead a productive life. The whole sit-in at City Hall, I think it backfired on those advocates.
It certainly doesn't make me as a business owner, because I tell you what, if I would have been a potential business owner wanting to go down and file for my business license, no way. No, that is a huge red flag for me to take my happy ass, you know, 10 miles east and set up my business in Spokane Valley.
Well, I was adamantly opposed to opening up City Hall as a day-long come in and hang out. City Hall is a place to do business. You go down there, you pay your bills. You go down there, you apply for your business license. Those types of things. It's
you
a place
seek
of
services,
business.
Whatever exactly. It is. You find remedies to problems. That's what City Hall exists for.
It's not a place to go hang out because you don't have an alternative place to go.
Sure.
It's just not. You know, the city of Spokane did a really good job of opening up warming shelters in the wintertime. And I applaud them for that. And I think they kept them open until April 1st, at least one of them. But you know, that's a taxpayer owned building.
Sure.
City Hall. Taxpayers have a right to go down there and feel safe in their environment, not walk in. And, you know, and I equate it to a Spokane library, the downtown library. You know, they had to take extraordinary steps, in their bathrooms. They put blue lights in the bathrooms to make it harder for people to go in the bathrooms and shoot up.
Sure.
I was approached by a lady a couple weeks ago, and she said, my son used to like going to the downtown library, and I would freely let him go. She said, not anymore. It's become a safe haven for not the homeless, but the transient population to go in and use the free Wi-Fi and things like that. You know, you've taken a public facility that the taxpayers have paid for, and you've made it all-inclusive to everybody, but there's no accountability, you know. To have the ability to go into a public library and go into the bathroom and shoot up heroin or something like that, that to me is wrong.
Well, yeah, and I'm just want to loop back to the that video of Seattle is dying, right? One of the police officers says they're not even allowed to contact them. You could see it in plain view, and if it's you know it's a felony to possess heroin, but you're not allowed to do anything about it.
Well, and it goes back to, you know, decriminalizing those small amounts of those illegal drugs, you know, and I don't know what the number is, but typically, you know, less than a certain amount, and you can just go about your day and keep doing your drugs.
Sure.
And a lot of that is born out of City Hall and tying the hands of the police officers in Seattle. I've got a lot of friends that I serve with in the military that are Seattle police officers, and they're extremely frustrated. And the thing that they each echo time and time again is, I can't wait to get out of Seattle.
Right.
And it's sad because you have lifelong residents of Seattle that want to flee because they don't feel safe. They can't do their job. You walk through any place in Seattle except for the affluent neighborhoods, and even those are starting to be impacted. But, you know, any place in Seattle you walk, there's homeless encampments, there's, feces and urine and stench. And we are doing a disservice to the majority, the silent majority, who are productive, who pay taxes.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. So we have spent, we're at about 50 minutes right now. Is there anything you want to talk about homelessness other than what we've already discussed? I'd like to pivot to some of your other issues and maybe discuss those so people get a better idea.
I just want to touch on one other aspect of homelessness.
Sure.
As it relates to the addictions, the drugs, or the mental illnesses, you know, we are doing such a disservice to the homeless who are trying to get better. You know, you go to a drug treatment program to try and stay clean and sober. Well, what do we do when you get done? Those people go back into the same environment that they came from, the same environment that probably, you know, lent itself to a lot of what they were doing today.
Absolutely.
So a big part of this rehabilitation and helping out the transient population that want help is to change the environment that they go back to. And it goes back into housing first. If you give somebody a apartment downtown and there's no accountability, and we call them wet houses because they have the ability to do drugs, drink, and whatever they want. If you put them in that environment first and then they get clean and sober and then they go back to that same environment where all of their friends are at who are doing drugs and things like that, that's the environment they came from. That's the environment they know. Okay. When I moved in here, I would, could do my drugs. I went to treatment. I'm moving back into the same place where I can do my drugs. And so, again, there's no impetus to stay off drugs.
Sure.
Or off alcohol or continue with your mental health counseling. Continue being, medication compliant. So, it's a multifaceted problem, but again, I take a simplistic approach, and it starts, and I can't stress this enough. It starts with enforcing the law, accountability, and making sure that those people have a sense of self-worth to get them the help that they need.
Okay. So what I'm going to do right now is I'm going to pause. We're going to insert a commercial here, pay some bills, and we'll come back with some follow-on topics. All right, we are back. You talked about accountability and in our last segment. One of the things that I hear over and over again, maybe not so much as of late, but a new jail. I've seen your Facebook profile. It's obvious that the sheriff endorses you and respects you as a person and wants to see you do well in this campaign. How do you feel about a new jail and how do we fund that? What are some of the intricacies of that argument that citizens may not know that they need to know, and what's your position on it?
Well, first off, I think our jail was built in the early 80s, and there are some out there that are subject matter experts in law enforcement that have stated that it was inadequate when it was built.
Okay.
Here we are, almost 205,000 people within the city, and roughly, 500,000 countywide?
Sure.
We need a bigger jail. If we're going to enforce the law and we're going to make it extremely uncomfortable to be chronically homeless or to be part of that transient community, we need a bigger jail. There has to be consequences for your actions. Right now, we're a catch and release city. You've got felons that are arrested and then they get out 3 hours later. It's doing a disservice to the honest people who live in Spokane and
sure.
Spokane County.
Sure.
There's advocates for a new jail. There's people that say that jails don't work. You can look at any data you want. I personally think we need a new jail. I don't personally think it needs to be downtown in the public safety building or in that area, maybe on the West Plains. I applaud Al French for his efforts in trying to get a new jail. You know, something like a city-county partnership to get the funds together to build a new jail.
Sure.
The McCleary decision last year, and you can see the effects now, and it's been in the paper for, you know, at least 3 or 4 weeks now with the teacher layoffs. The McCleary decision opened up $2.20 per thousand in valuation and property taxes.
Okay, so for someone who has zero idea what the McCleary decision is, can you explain that a little bit so they know a little more background before you start talking numbers?
The McCleary decision, it was born out of a lawsuit. Mr. and Mrs. McCleary said that the state of Washington was not following the state constitution and providing adequate public education for their child.
Sure.
They ended up suing the state of Washington, went to the Washington State Supreme Court, and they won. So what that said was that the state of Washington has to bear a lot of the burden now for public education. So taxpayers in Spokane, we're going to see a $2.20 per thousand relief in property taxes because of the McCleary decision and the amount of money that was supposed to come from Olympia to pay for public education.
Okay.
It's taxes that us taxpayers are already paying in property taxes. You actually would have seen a reduction in property taxes.
Sure.
However, you can see that it started to be a money grab. You know, when the voters at large passed the library bond and the school bond, that ate up almost a dollar of that $2.20 relief that people would have seen.
Okay.
In reduction in property taxes. Then you have Proposition 1, which was for police and fire. That ate up about 30 cents per thousand in valuation for that initiative.
And so, again, just for someone who's not smart on this, you're talking about valuation per thousand of your home.
Of your
home,
correct. So
you're a homeowner.
You're a homeowner, correct. Okay.
So someone renting, they may see it third order effect of that by an increase in rent, but it's not something that directly affects their paycheck.
Or they could have seen a third order effect in reducing rent. You know, I'm not a landlord.
Sure.
So I can't speak on behalf of landlords, but if it's just like with minimum wage, you see businesses have to increase the price of their food, you know, specifically restaurants,
sure.
Service industry have to increase because of minimum wage increases. If I were a landlord and I saw a reduction in my property taxes, I would be more inclined to pass that on to the renter of my property. If I'm paying, you know, $1,000 less per year in property taxes, I'm going to reduce the rent and pass that on to the end user. So we still have about a dollar floating around out there from the McCleary decision.
Sure.
Guarantee it's not going to go to waste. Somebody's going to grab it up, and it's going to be in the form of another bond issue or something like that. You could very well take that dollar that's hanging out there, that dollar per thousand valuation, and you could say, okay, this is going to be seed money for our new jail. And we're going to partner with the county, and we're each going to pony up. And because we house, I think 10% of our beds are federal inmates, I'm sure that we could get a grant from the federal government, since they're using up some of our bed space,
sure,
to help build a new jail.
Is that not in place right now, or do you not know?
The feds pay for the bed space that they have, but what we can do is if we build a bigger jail, we could possibly provide more bed space for the feds, which means more federal money coming in,
sure,
for that jail.
Okay. Because you do have you have a U.S. District Court right downtown, and they don't,
correct,
have a U.S. District Court.
Well, and that, you know, that's a lot of people ask the jail question, well, why are the federal inmates in? Because we have a federal courthouse,
yeah,
in downtown Spokane. So,
sure,
you know, and there's one here, there's one in Benton County. Obviously, there's some on the west side, but, you know, there's creative ways that you can get this money together to start funding things like a new jail. As I said previously, I'm not the subject matter expert there.
Sure.
You know, Al French would probably be a wealth of knowledge with regard to a new jail and how that can be funded. But it has to be a Spokane community effort And it has to be a partnership between county, city, potentially businesses in Spokane. And you know full well, being in the military, that the public-private partnerships are huge.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And, you know, partnering with the surrounding community, partnering with businesses, things like that, you get buy-in, because at the end of the day, the benefits far outweigh any monetary loss that you may experience.
Sure, sure. All right, so I know JL wasn't on, is that your phone? Shame on you, Sean Poole.
It's normally silenced. My humblest apologies.
I
told you up front I was silenced. My bad.
All right. So that obviously, JL, wasn't on your top four things. Where do you want to go to next? We've kind of touched on infrastructure and the roads. We've really talked in depth about homeless population. A little bit of property crime with the homeless is what's next for you on your list? We have fraud, waste, and abuse left.
Fraud, waste, and abuse is a given for me because I grew up with it in the military. And it's one of those things that, you know, being a fiscal conservative.
Everybody who's ever worn a uniform in the last 60 years knows those three terms. When they hear fraud, waste, and abuse, what that means and how it impacts daily lives in the military. For someone who doesn't know what that means, you want to kind of explain to them how it affects city government and what you're proposing to do to fix it.
I use the analogy for fraud, waste, and abuse. Aside from, you know, the perks that you get going to work at city government, we're real adept at forming a committee, to hire a consulting company to come in to decipher the results of those committee findings, to then form another committee. And all the while we're wasting taxpayer money because it costs to do all these things.
Right.
The way that happens at Spokane is as we see it every day. You know, there's an opponent out there, a mayoral candidate that wants to collaborate, wants to bring people together to come up with a solution. The time for coming up with solutions is way past us. Now is the time for action.
You don't want to say your name. I know exactly who you're talking about.
You know, it's...
funny.
This form a committee to potentially come up with solutions, you know, a year or 2 years down the road. We should be in almost crisis action mode right now.
Why are you scared to say your name? I'm going to call you to the carpet,
because,
man.
Because I vowed, I've taken pot shots at some other candidates, and it's counterproductive.
Hold on, real quick though, Sean. Is it really taking pot shots to have? Because the title of this podcast is Civil Discourse, right? And we don't have very many rules. So one of the rules is you can't attack a person, right? I don't ever want an exchange of ideas to be targeted to an attack on a single person. But I don't think having a conversation about ideas and policy is attacking a person. So if you think her direction is the wrong way to go, that's really why I did this thing, because we can't have conversations with differing opinions in this country anymore without being labeled. So if you don't agree with her policy position, I don't think there's anybody that is going to listen to this should view that as a negative. I think it's a positive. I would really love a candidate to sit down here, because no one has ever mentioned, Chris Schroll didn't do it, Ben Stucker didn't do it, did not differentiate their policy decisions and how they differ from their candidates. Someone's name is like taboo now. I'm not going to give them press.
I can't say I disagree with her policies, because she has no policies. You know, she had a press conference in Riverfront Park.
I know.
And she's running on Spokane solutions, and the entire media in Spokane was there, and she was asked some very pointed questions. What is your solution for this? How are you going to address this? And she said, I don't have solutions right now. So if she had a policy I could disagree with, I would probably disagree with it. But right now I haven't seen any policy that has come from anywhere in her campaign. You know, there's in the military, we have thinkers and we have doers. Sometimes you have both. Sometimes it's kind of rare, especially in combat arms.
And unless you're a badass warrant officer flying UH-60 Blackhawks for a living. So, I digress. Go ahead.
Now you made me lose my train of thought.
Thinkers and doers.
I'm a doer. And as I said before, I've been called a simpleton because I take a simplistic approach to problem solving. You know, you learn something after 30 years in the military. And if nothing else, you learn how to solve problems.
Mm-hmm.
Because the military is wrought with problems. And let's be honest, that's what you're there to do, is solve a problem. You know, many times as it relates to war or going to war.
Sure.
Solve problems. You take a problem and you come up with a logical, simple solution for it. You make a decision. If that decision is the wrong decision, then you adjust fire or you adjust your course of action and you try a different solution. But to continue, and we see it in the streets department with the roads, the potholes.
Yeah.
We see it with the homeless issue. We see it expanding in, you know, the fraud, waste, and abuse in city government. We see it all over the place.
Sure.
Let's start doing for a change. Let's start, you know, everything that I've talked about, it's basically a promise that I made to the people that have entrusted me or that will entrust me if I get elected to run this city. At the end of the day, the only person that has to look in the mirror is me. And if I'm not happy with what I see, then I failed in life and I failed in what I'm trying to do.
Sure.
So let's start doing for a change. But again, going back to her, I haven't seen any policies come out of her campaign that there's any solution in sight.
So can I ask you this then?
Mm-hmm.
So what voters are going to obviously make a decision and who to cast their vote for. And I think it's a really good thing. I wish it would catch on nationally that we don't label someone with a political party. And that's something that I really think is awesome about Washington mayoral races. If you want to get to know somebody, you actually have to get to know their policies. You have to know what this person stands for and wants to accomplish. And I think too much in our current daily doings, you know, if you're a Democrat, you watch MSNBC and CNN. If you're a Republican, Fox News is your go-to. But I don't think, because I've tried to have intelligent conversations about political decisions with people, and it immediately turns to political talking points. Very few people actually know an issue in depth. So when someone, and sorry, that's a very long lead-in to the question that I'm going to ask you, is when someone wants to know, who am I going to cast my vote for in this election? What sets you apart from the options that they have that aren't Sean Poole?
The biggest thing that sets me apart is I have come up with potential solutions for the problems that we face in Spokane. And they haven't changed in a year and 3 months. Same solutions for the same problems. I haven't seen any other candidate out there that actually offers real solutions. And I don't go trolling the other candidates to find out what they're saying. We can sit here and talk, you know, political talking points and talk about, you know, urban density or talk about economic growth. We can talk about the homeless. But until you ask me a pointed question, what is your solution to the homelessness issue? I can sit here unequivocally and say, my solutions haven't changed. I've offered up numerous potential solutions for the homeless issue. And they will never change unless we get to a point where some of these solutions aren't working. So then we adjust our course of action.
Sure.
And try something different. And again, I think I'm the only candidate that has done that. You know, when I first started this race, people, and we like to label, you're right, especially in this political climate. I was never involved in politics. It's divisive and it's polarizing.
Sure.
And
it doesn't have to be, but
it doesn't
is.
Have to be. You know, I have conservative values. I have liberal values. You know, if you have to label me a Republican. When I first started, people would ask me, and I would say I'm an American with conservative values. And that's what I hold true. It doesn't mean that, you know, if you are on the left side of center, that I automatically hate you. I have liberal friends with great potential solutions for
sure,
problems.
Absolutely.
You know, everybody contributes.
And so, you know, you just hit a nail on the head, and it's something that I've really tried to bang into people within my sphere of influence. And I go back to the founding fathers of this nation, right? So none of them were politicians. None of them were politicians. They all had professional jobs. And when it was time to come and do our nation's work, they came together, they argued, they screamed and hollered at one another. But ultimately, they did the nation's work. And now it seems that politics has become a profession. It is something that maybe not so much at the local level, but certainly at federal government and some state governments, it's a career. Well, and it's something that someone is groomed for.
I think you see it on the local level as well. You know, we've had a lot of politicians that have come through Spokane and held office, and they've used that as a springboard or stepping stone into either state or federal politics.
Sure.
You know, I understand now why the average blue collar person doesn't run for political office. The system is not designed or set up for the average person to be elected. They're just not. You know, so many people rely on name recognition. You know, yeah. There's so many people out there that still vote party lines.
Yeah.
There's people out there that are not going to vote for me because they're a Democrat. They have no idea what I stand for. They have no idea what my policies potentially are, but they will never, and they could be the best in the world, but they will never vote for me because, you know, I guess I identify as a Republican.
That's criminal to me, man. That's and so if a voter goes into a voting booth, and well, not necessarily here in Washington, because you would get to do it from the comfort of our own home and then mail it back. But if that is the only thing, so if you're listening out there, and I don't care what side of the party line you're on, if you're listening out there and that is the only knowledge that you have about a candidate, or if it is the primary method that you use to choose your candidate, shame on you. I think if our politicians got to a point where compromise was part of the normal discourse, we would not rely so heavily on party affiliations. If you, Sean Poole, as a conservative person, could talk to someone who is a liberal person and discuss the best way forward for the city of Spokane, that's the person that I want. I don't necessarily want I don't want all of city government or all of federal government to have to be dominated by one particular party to get things done.
It's interesting that you talk about that. I've seen, since Nadine announced her candidacy, I've seen more comments primarily on social media, and they're just this: she was really pretty when she was a newscaster, so I'm going to vote for her. I've had people that approach me and say, you know what, you're a conservative guy, I'm going to vote for you. And I tell them point blank, just because I'm conservative, don't vote for me. Educate yourself. Vote for whoever you want, but just become an educated voter.
Sure.
Vote for the person that most identifies with you and your values.
Yeah, exactly.
And what's going to be best for, you know, everybody in Spokane, not just a vocal minority, not just a silent majority, but for everybody as a whole.
Sure.
And it's too easy these days, especially with, you know, getting your ballot in the mail, to sit back there and look at your ballot and go, oh yeah, I recognize this name because I saw a yard sign, or I recognize this name because, you know, they were in broadcast journalism, or I recognize this, you know, this person because they were on the top 10 at the post office.
Sure.
So it's a matter of educating yourself on what the issues are and what the potential solutions are that each candidate brings to the table. I'm not going to get my feelings hurt if you don't vote for me, but I'm probably going to get my feelings hurt if you just vote for somebody because it's party lines, or you vote for somebody because they have nice hair. You know,
I'm not because they didn't take the time to get to know you.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And you know, candidates' websites are a big thing. And again, if you look at my website, you'll see that.
What is it?
It's SeanPoole2019.com.
Spell it out.
SeanPoole2019.com.
Excellent. So you want to get to know this guy that has graciously volunteered his time to come and talk to you. Go check out his website. You can find what's the mayoral Facebook page for your, because I know you have one.
It's just Sean Poole.
Sean Poole.
Yep, just Sean Poole.
Okay.
If you just do a Facebook search Sean Poole, my name will pop up.
All right.
And I think on Facebook you're limited to 5,000 friends or 4,999 friends or something like that. And
well, that's crazy.
So I've got 4,500. I think I'm the only person in the history of Facebook that went from zero friends to, you know, 4,500 close knit friends in a matter of a couple months. But you know, you'll see that the solutions that I offer specifically on my Facebook page, they're the same solutions or potential solutions that I've offered for the past year and a half. And it's those solutions are born out of, you know, being on the front lines, having a front row seat to the majority of the issues that we're facing in Spokane.
So we've discussed a lot of policy issues. Where are we at right now? We're at an hour. What does that say? An hour and 15 minutes? Yeah, I think so. What else? So what do people need to know about you that we haven't discussed? What do you want them to know?
I want them basically to know that I am here for everybody. I don't go out and do photo ops, although I've had numerous opportunities.
Why?
It's not who I am. You're taking it, you know, let's talk about the homeless again for a second. Because you decide you're going to run for mayor, all of a sudden you go out with your entourage in tow. You've got your professional photographer. You've got, you know, all these people in tow, and you make an appearance at a homeless shelter. And then you use that appearance and the photo opportunities that come with that appearance, and you splash it all over social media. Number one, it's disingenuous to me.
Sure.
If you cared about the homeless so much, you would have been involved in the homeless issue a long time ago.
Right.
And number two, you're taking advantage of a crisis in Spokane. You're taking advantage of a group of people in Spokane that don't deserve to be a pawn.
Exploited
in, sure, in your bid for, you know, becoming the mayor of Spokane. And I just, and I've had numerous people that have said, you need to start doing that. And it goes against my moral North Pointing compass. I mean, it's hard for me to do something like that. I've been involved in the issues for 27 years in this city. And, you know, I think I can unequivocally say that I am probably more qualified than every other candidate out there with regard to some of these issues, because I've experienced them firsthand, real life, on a day-to-day basis.
Sure. Do you want to talk about that? And I don't know what the department policy is with Spokane Fire. I mean, can you talk about fire department business on a platform like this?
I choose not to.
Okay.
Just that, you know, I got in trouble in the past last fall for allegedly campaigning on duty.
I saw
while I was
that.
In uniform.
I saw that.
And you know, they were some pretty nebulous allegations. I don't know how somebody could draw a nexus between something that I posted that was a matter of an open forum. It was accessible to the public.
Sure.
That I got in trouble for. I took my lumps. You know, it happened.
Live and learn.
Exactly. And if you try and navigate all the rules in the PDC, it takes you forever. And I've tried to educate myself as far as PDC rules, and I think I'm doing a fairly good job. So I choose to stay out of, you know, my employer's business.
Gotcha. Understandable. All right. So do you want to pivot to something else, or you want to wrap it up? Where you want to go from here?
How about Tahiti?
I wouldn't go to Tahiti. I'd go back to Tennessee.
Oh, okay. Okay. I think we just about covered everything. You know, we don't have to, as a society, we don't have to come up with these real, dynamic, multifaceted solutions for problems. We've tried that. It's not working. Let's take a simplistic approach. I think in the long run, it'll save money. It'll save time, and it'll do a lot more to help solve the problems that we currently have than what we're doing now.
All right, Sean. I want to thank you for volunteering your time. Come down here and sit and talk with us. Allow the voters that are going to pick the next mayor to get to know you a little better. You're going to probably walk away from here and say, crap, I should have talked about X, Y, or Z. Get a hold of me. You're always welcome back. The election for several months. So if you want to utilize this, if you find it beneficial, come on back and talk to us.
I appreciate you having me here, Anthony. Thank you.
You who have stuck with us for an hour and 20 minutes, I want to thank you for tuning in. And please go visit Sean's website, visit his social media. If you want to get to know him a little better, that's certainly a way to do it. We will leave links.